Hello and welcome to Upstream First. So this talk is a little bit about maintaining open source software for the long run. So if you're an, I don't know, institution or a company and you're a part of the IT team and you have to deal with all these cool little open source projects, I mean, that's why we are here. You still sometimes, I guess, get annoyed by having to run them, having to maintain them, in particular if you get lots of these projects. So before I dive into this, let's talk a little bit about myself, because then you understand where I'm coming from and why can I talk a little bit about this. So I've been involved in open source for quite a long time. It was a slow process for me getting into this, writing software, contributing then to other software and such like that. So I can't really say this is a point where open source started for me. It was a continuous process. I've started as a teenager working with IT a little bit, starting programming. I find that interesting, but then my real first professional IT job was when I was a student at university, and from there I've started becoming a developer, later on more a system architect or a type thing, and also a DevOps engineer, so I was responsible not only for writing the software and or writing some concepts for the software, but later on also for deploying that. So I jumped around quite a bit, and now I'm working for the ELAN e.V., that's the e-learning academic network, which is a German non-profit organization which deals with all kinds of e-learning related, mostly software, not only software, but mostly software. We are working with mostly higher education institutions, so universities and research networks and things like that. And we are kind of before these data centers of these universities. So if you start with a user, so you may start with a student, then there is the lecturer, which is the next hop in the software chain of end users. Then you maybe go to the e-learning center or directly to the data center, and then that's where we come in. So we work with a lot of different institutions worldwide, though our main focus is on German-speaking countries, so Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And so I've come around quite a bit, and I've seen a lot of people deploying open source software, and we help people with deploying open source software. So that's where I'm coming from, and so you imagine open source as this neat glass and steel structure, everything is nice and shiny, and that's what you would like to see when you come in and someone tells you, yeah, we've deployed, Nextcloud or something at our institution, we are running that. Unfortunately, if you're looking behind the scenes, it doesn't really look like this. More often than not, it kind of looks like this. So it's still standing, that's absolutely correct. Hopefully they plastered something in front of this so people don't necessarily see that it looks like this if you're not looking at the infrastructure itself. But unfortunately, that's often how you get projects. And over time with helping people that things don't end up like this, that's where we come in, and that's what I want to talk about. So what can you do so that things do not end up like this? And yesterday, right here, there was an interesting talk about skills, so basically a checklist of skills that you need to succeed in IT. That was a really interesting talk, I thought, and someone relates to this talk because that was the broad approach of what do I need to do to make sure this doesn't happen. I'm trying to go a little bit deeper and specifically look at open source projects and problems that come with deploying them. So I'm looking at a more specific problem here and looking at basically how can I avoid this maintenance hell of I can't really deal with all this anymore. Before I do that, let's still talk very, very briefly about a few general problems, because these are general problems that you will see and that will play a role when we talk later on about the more specific problems of dealing with maintaining upstream patches and things like that. So general problems. The first thing is that you've all probably, at least if you have to run infrastructure, got a project from someone else and they said, oh yeah, I did set this up here, can you maintain this? If you're lucky, no one else had seen this before, so we can just shut that down and not run that. If you're unlucky, maybe your boss had already seen that, he said, oh, that's nice, and maybe the non-infrastructure guy that set that up also told you about, well, it was really easy to set up, it only did take me half an hour or so. So now you're in the conundrum of having to take this over, and that's something that a lot of people have to deal with it. So the and that's one of the problems that amounts to later on things being broken, because they don't necessarily then have time to properly set it up and things like that. And the worst thing that can also happen that this is, I mean, this is obviously undocumented when you get something like that, but there are also changes in the code and custom patches in there as well. That's a problem. The other problem is that people sometimes think that things are easy. And it's something I have seen a couple of times, even among technicians, where they didn't really think what they were doing, and they told someone high up that, well, you want this specific thing. Now, it's not really built for that, but you could take this and this other thing and do this really weird hack in between, and that should work. It probably does for the next 5 minutes. That's also something that I've seen a couple of times, and that does not help you. So this is also a kind of foundational problem you see all the time. So that people think it's easy, but you actually want a very proper setup. You want something to maintain in the long run, and that's something entirely different from, I don't know, a technology demonstration or something like that. So yeah, these are a few general problems that you have to deal with it with. And so what we should take from this is maintaining these things can be hard. Now, obviously, these were some bad examples, but you have to go through all these things, make sure that you can maintain these, and it's not always easy. That's the first thing. And the other thing is we should talk a little bit about maintenance in general. So sometimes you see people and they will tell you, well, it's running. Why should I update? It's working, right? So why can't I just keep this like it is forever? And I mean, that may work if it's a local thing, if no one else has access to this, if it specifically does not have network access. But it's not something that works in general. And the first thing and the thing why I should update is something that people don't really think, at least admins and people like DevOps engineers wouldn't necessarily always think about this. But it's also something that I've seen quite a lot, that users demand updates. In particular, if you run open source projects which other people run as well, so like GitLab or Nextcloud or BigBlueButton or Opencast or things like that, where someone will see another instance, see that they have cool new features, you don't, so you get the request to update that, or you actually get a better reputation for running this crunchy old thing. So that's one of the things you want to update. Now, this isn't necessarily the most important thing, but it's certainly one of the things. So the second thing is support. Now, if everything runs great, that's okay. But usually, when you take a look at projects, they will either support the latest version, or if they're somewhat bigger projects, they will support a range of versions. And if you're within these version ranges, that's fine. If you then have a problem and reach out, you will probably get feedback. People will help you. People will tell you, that's a problem we know of. If it's a new problem, they may help you fix it or even fix it for you. That's great. Now, if a problem arises and you're on a very old version, that may not necessarily be the case. So it could be that you don't necessarily get any help at all. Or often I see comments like, this is not supported anymore, please upgrade, try again, and then let me know. If that still doesn't work, then we're going to help you. Which, to be fair to the upstream project, is something which creates a lot less work for them, and they don't have an infinite amount of time. So it's fair to say that's probably okay from their perspective as well. But it's increasing the risk for you if you run old software and then run into problems. It's not only the local problem you have to deal with, but also that you have to deal with it on your own. The next thing is compatibility. So very often, it's not only your software that's running standalone, but your software that you're running is integrated into something else. This can be that, I don't know, you're running Opencast, and Opencast requires a certain Java version, but at some point, Java 7 is not longer supported, and you may not want to keep your old, I don't know, CentOS 6 machines around. You are forced to update in some sense. Or what I've also seen is TLS support. One of the larger vendors of conferencing software in for rooms like this, we've seen that when we updated the test servers for one of the video conferencing open source projects I contribute to only support TLS 1.2, all the devices from that manufacturer actually broke because they only support 1.1 and I think 1.0, but yeah. That's a proprietary vendor, but this could also be your old service that you're running. And so it's often that your service doesn't exist in an empty space, but has to integrate with other projects. And so other projects can break your problem, can break your service, even if you don't touch it at all. And finally, of course, it's security. We all make mistakes, and I can proudly say that I've found and fixed a number of security issues, but I can also not so proudly say that I probably introduced a few over the years. And we all make mistakes, and all of these libraries and softwares, stacks and things like that will get a security issue eventually. And the question is how they get fixed. And if you're running a very old version, well, you may have a version with an important security issue. You actually may not know that there is a security issue there because developers are also not always great in handling security issues, though I think over the years people have gotten better in general. But it could be that it gets fixed silently, or that they don't quite test old versions and they just say, yeah, these new versions were affected and they are now fixed. But you don't necessarily know that your old version was affected as well. So again, something that is really, really important because it can really damage your company or institution, whoever you work for. And so running something which has as little security issues as possible, which usually is the most recent version, does absolutely make sense. So in short, well, yes, we definitely want to update. So yeah, we've seen a few of the general problems. We've seen that we do want to update. We also should shortly talk about customizations and things like that. And this is one of the arguments for open source software that I actually hear quite often. And I think it's a very valid argument that software, you don't only get the software and have to run it as is, but you can actually adjust it to your needs. You can write integrations into whatever else you run. You can modify it and improve the usability to whatever special case you have. But it's a trap because if you start modifying it, that also means that it's something that you have to deal with. So if you have customizations, and have custom patches on top of these projects, and you're not contributing them back, so that's the thing here, then yeah, you need to deal with these modifications every time you do an upgrade. So you have to reapply this patch. This patch may not apply anymore when you do an update. You also don't profit from upstream testing the new releases. I mean, sure, you still profit from upstream testing the new releases on their features. But if you integrate here then and change and the upstream project, then with every change, basically, you could theoretically break something. And so it's now on your own to test these projects and to make sure that everything is up and well. And yeah, and the last point here is that you also need some documentation of how to apply this, because let's just be a little bit morbid. Let's say I'm going out of the door at the end of the day today, and then I'm be run over by a bus. So someone else would need to pick that up. And if I don't have to document a proper documentation for what I was doing, for why these patches exist, for how to apply them, well, no one really can work with this anymore. And so you have a very high risk at that point. And hopefully I don't run out of the building at the end of the day and will be run over by a bus. But even if you're just on vacation, or if you're sick for a few weeks or something like that, that's something that can always happen. And so you do need to make sure all of your customizations get proper documentation. And I'm very aware that that's a theory. You don't always have that. Actually, you very seldom have that if you have custom patches. I've seen a lot of times where people were later on actually reverse engineering these patches and thinking, okay, why do we actually have this? Do I need to apply this? How do I apply this? So yeah, customizations do create a lot of work and make maintenance harder. And you have to constantly maintain them. So that all being said, let's go to upstream first. And you may now think, oh, that's the title of this whole talk. So what do you mean with upstream first? And upstream first is essentially a strategy or a set of strategies for dealing with modifications in all of these open source projects, and kind of thinking of how do I minimize the long-term work I have to spend on all of these projects. It's something that, honestly, I've seen surprisingly few people do. Although being at a conference like this, I think a lot of people have contributed to open source projects, or at least have the idea that it's a good thing. But if you actually go out in the world, then a lot of people still know about the concept of they could contribute that back, but not so many people do. Or what I also see from people who are aware that they should do that, that they basically say, yeah, I'm going to do that eventually. I should, but I want to test this for a while. Something like that. Let's go into this, and we're going to these points one by one, essentially. And let's start with upstream first, and that's basically the idea that the first thing you should think about is, can you bring, if you want to have a modification, can you bring this upstream and not deploy it locally? So basically saying, we want this, but can I make sure that this goes upstream first? It's going to be integrated into the main project, and we only deploy this with the next major updates where this is automatically included. The cool thing, and the really, really cool and nice thing about this is that makes maintenance a hell of a lot easier, because that essentially means we've talked about, or I've used GitLab as an example for, let's say you've installed GitLab, I don't know, via the container or the RPM packages or something like that. That's, I guess, one of the usual ways of installing this. And if you get things upstream, that means that the documentation for an upgrade is already there, because it's the upstream documentation. So you can just run your, I don't know, DNF update, and you have your patch in. And that's a really, really powerful thing to do, because that essentially means you have a one-time investment and then have to kind of never deal with this again. I mean, obviously, there's always a risk of someone modifying this in a way you don't like, and you have to work with it again. But in general, you push it upstream. It's now upstream who's maintaining this, and you have to never deal with it again. And that's absolutely great. I think the first thing you would think about if I say it like that is, yeah, but then I would need to wait for I don't know how long to get these patches in. But working with other institutions, working with customers of ours, I've learned that a lot of the time you can actually convince them to do that. And it works quite well for them as well, because if you have a larger software and you want to deploy the next major version on a specific date anyway, then that may be that, you know, that in a month or two there is a maintenance window where you have time, because I don't know, it's end of the semester at the university and end of the testing phase. So that's where not a lot of people are using this. So that's a very good point in time where you can run big updates, make larger changes. And that's also a very good point in time to introduce your new patches. And it's a little bit harder at first to convince people to do that. Over time, they will usually understand that it works like this, especially if you've done it a couple of times, then it just becomes normal. And it also means you don't constantly have to change your system. You can push it all to this update. And yes, if you can do that, that's great. Please do it. It will really help you out. And it will also help out in other ways, because you actually know that things are properly tested, because someone else usually will test it. I mean, not always, but usually someone else will take over your code, so they will review that in some way, which also limits the potential of issues in your code and things like that. So if you can do that, that's certainly great. Sometimes it's, but what if we need it now? It's kind of urgent. Your login mechanism is broken. You certainly don't want to wait for 2 months to get that functionality back or something like that. So there can be cases where this doesn't work, but in general, I would say if you can do that, that's the way to go. And in your hierarchy, or if in your strategy, that's the first point you should make. And if you can do that, that's great. But again, what if we need it now? The first thing you should also take a look at is alternatives. It's also something that kind of surprises me sometimes. And this is mostly when you deal with new projects, so newly adapted projects. Someone told someone else that they should use this tool for dealing with problem. They want to introduce that. They realize that it doesn't quite work for them, and then they patch that so it works for them. Often, if you have a specific use case, someone else in the world also has this same specific use case. Not always, but often. And so, especially when it comes to infrastructure tools and things like that, it may already be that there is an alternative out there, and you can take a look at that and not maintain your custom patches. So just something to keep in mind, if people tell you that this is urgent, we need to get this in, at least ask yourself if there is an alternative. Next thing is also ask yourself if it's really something you need and really something you need urgent. Because understanding where this need comes from really helps you in the sense that sometimes it's just that someone heard that someone else said that his boss wanted this. And at the end of the day, it was just said, I don't know, one person said, oh, it would be really nice to have this. And this was passed on and on and on and modified, and you would end up with this requirement, which is an actual requirement. And since you have to maintain this if you adapt this for a long time, and it's going to make you a lot of work, it's always good to just ask once again, is it really a requirement? But yeah, I mean, it can be. So we kind of need some strategies also to deal with things if you actually have to maintain this, if you actually have to patch this, and if you have to have it right now. So one strategy, and this is something that usually works with projects you know kind of well, so is to basically patch this locally, but also at the same time bring it upstream. That means that you have to maintain this only for a very short time. Hopefully you can even maintain this only for the current version and then get the patch with the next update. You don't actually need to build a large infrastructure for keeping track of your patches. You just need a small note or a small documentation on, there's this one specific patch, and hopefully linked to the upstream pull request, this is in a few days or weeks, and we don't really have to maintain this long term. Again, this is something where you have to do some kind of risk management on, because if you really don't know the upstream project and you don't know that you can get it in, then you probably want better documentation, a better structure of keeping track on these patches. But if you do know the project and you can reasonably say that you probably get this in, and again, I've been working with open source projects for quite a long time and have good connections to a few projects where I know that if it's a smaller patch which fixes a bug and it does look reasonable for me, I can expect this to go in a short amount of time. Worst case, I can contact a few other of the project members and talk to them in person and convince them that that goes in. So and so I can judge that the risk for this is not very high, and this is still a good way to get things in upstream. Also get relatively quickly feedback from the upstream project, also on basically a review on your code, so that you can, worst case, adapt your local changes if someone notices that there is a big problem in there, and you don't have to maintain anything long term. However, obviously, you don't know all of your projects you work with that well, and sometimes you need something with a little bit more structure. And so what we've started doing when that's the case is basically still try to get things upstream, keep that thing locally, keep off list of things locally, and build a custom version, but then try to push these patches upstream still as fast as possible. And what we use as tooling for this is literally just Git. So again, when it comes to knowing tooling around this, Git is probably one of the most important things to learn about in open source software by now. And what we are basically doing is something like this. So you have your, in blue here, your upstream repository, and you have a couple of tags, and you realize that you very urgently need a couple of patches on this, and you don't very well know the upstream project. You don't know that you can get things in there very quickly. But what you can do is to do something like, based on the 2.5 version here, you build a new branch. Either you name it, or we often name it either the 2.5 custom build or something like that, to make it clear that it's based on 2.5. Or what we also do sometimes is to basically name it based on the date so that we can see when we build this custom version. And what you then do is you apply your patches. Two recommendations here are document these patches very well so that you still know what these are doing, even if you have to maintain them for a longer time. And Git is great about that. You can document your commits very well. And I mean, we are often talking about smaller commits here. Please try to avoid commits in this branch, which basically say, adapted this patch a little bit. If possible, have one commit for a patch, have all the documentation on that, and then also, if possible, link from this commit to your pull request, to your upstream pull request, where you try to get that in. And so in this example, this would be that the Yelp integration broke again, and that we applied this as a pull request upstream as soon as we patched this locally. We're still maintaining that, but then later on, it hopefully will get merged. And in this example, in 2.6 here, it's merged. And so what we then do is basically to take the branch with our custom patches and do a Git rebase on the newer version. We throw out all the patches that got merged in between, and only have the ones left that are still open and still under discussion and things like that. You may end up with merge conflicts if you had to change that upstream. But yeah, I mean, that's something that can happen. But that's also where, if you have good documentation, you actually realize, okay, that got merged slightly different, but I can just kick out the patch anyway. So this, over time, really helped us with installations where we had to actually run a custom version for whatever reason. So definitely a recommendation, although again, only a recommendation if you can't avoid it. If you can, please do. It's very good, but still a pain in the ass, essentially. But still better than maintaining, I don't know, patch files somewhere, and still a lot better in realizing that this is a set of patches we have, and to have a way to systematically remove these patches again and bring them upstream. And yeah, essentially all far better than having one branch and you, for example, would then sometimes merge in the main branch into your branch and you don't really know anymore what patches are still in there, what custom patches you have and things like that. So this makes it very, very clear. Yeah, you could also take a look at this at basically the git commands you have to run. And again, this is basically just, you take the commit you want to base this on or take the tag you want to base this on. You create a new branch, you apply your patches, and then at the end of the day, if you want to update, then you would rebase that. And from there, obviously, you would build, I don't know, your Docker container and then deploy that, for example. So yeah, this is a structure which we have worked with for a while. So real world example would be something like this. Now you see that a lot of these patches, and unfortunately not all of these patches, have some issue linked to this. And by the way, the XYZ is just removing the customer here. So here's a couple of patches we have in one of the custom versions, and there are pull requests for a few of these patches already where we know that we can get things upstream, and we are always trying to do that to minimize our own work for maintaining this. So yeah, that's definitely a recommendation. Yeah, and the last thing, and remember, this is basically a strategy. You start at the top where you say, okay, I want to bring this upstream and bring it upstream first and then deploy it. And you go basically down this list of fallbacks. And the maintenance we've looked at right now is already basically the second to last. But at the end of the day, sometimes, yeah, you don't really have a choice. You have to fork something, you have to maintain your custom thing, you may need to build your own project. And at the end of the day, it's just something where you should be pragmatic. You can do that. You just need to be aware that if you do that, it will take its toll. It will cost you in time and yeah, maintenance work and stuff like that. So just be aware that there is this time and you need to spend time and money and stuff on that. But yeah, if it's not avoidable, it's not avoidable. Yeah, but this is essentially a good strategy to start from the top and go to through this list and whenever you can stop at the top of this list, that's basically great. When I say, when we look at the strategy, a lot of these things are getting things upstream into the main project, and that's certainly the key here. So one thing you have to also take into consideration always, and that's already something where I said earlier, you have to take into consideration the risk management, and you have to see if you can get this in or can't get this in. And so you have to deal with these upstream projects, and you have to interact with these upstream projects. And that's also something we have seen over time, that sometimes problems arise. And the first thing you should learn is the tooling around contributions, which today essentially means learn to work with GitLab and GitHub. If you do that, you've already learned how to contribute to most open source projects today. Now, there are still a number of projects where you would contribute in a different way. I don't know, there is FFmpeg where you would use Git send mail to send a patch off, or you would send your local branch to an emailing list, and they would then discuss that on the list, and they would hopefully apply that, and that's an absolute pain in the ass, and you never want to deal with that. So if you know how to deal with GitLab and GitHub and Git in general, and additional thing, if you also know some basic things, you don't have to be a lawyer, but you should know some basic things about licenses, that will make contributing over time a lot easier for yourself. And it also reduces your burden of, I'm going to do that eventually. If you do that more and more and more, it gets easier and easier and easier. The second thing is that if you work with open source projects, all these open source projects also do some things slightly different. Getting to know projects a little bit better, with which you deal a lot, that's also something which is valuable. Getting to know if you, do need to sign a CLA, if they have special rules about something, if there is, a matrix chat where you can chat with the upstream projects and with the maintainers, which always helps, because if they know who you are, that's basically personal contact, and that makes things easier for them as well, because they know where you're coming from and things like that. So this is just a little bit of general tooling you should know when you start contributing to open source projects. The next thing, and this is kind of ridiculous that I have to say that, but it's something, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, which I've seen a few times, be nice to upstream. You don't get anything from not being nice to upstream, because I've seen, during the pandemic, people trying to push code upstream, and what they basically said was, hey, here, I wrote this patch, take it and be grateful for me writing this, because it makes things better. Well, it has some problems, but it works for us. With an attitude like that, it's very likely that upstream is upset, and I think they have every right to be upset, because essentially what you're doing is to bring your patch upstream so you don't have to maintain it anymore, and they will take over the work. So being nice doesn't hurt anyone. Maybe thank you for the great project. That's always nice. Ask them for their opinion and things like that. And this will also help you contributing and help you getting patches in. And again, it's kind of ridiculous that I have to say that, but I've seen this over and over again, that people do react differently. Another thing that I think is surprising, how often I see pull requests without proper documentation, and even in the sense of a proper documentation that there is maybe a title in the pull request, and that's it. No description, nothing at all, and people have to basically go through the code and read through it to understand what people want to do. That's not great, because as a maintainer, and I am a maintainer of a couple of open source projects, I don't necessarily have a full-time job maintaining this one project, so I don't really have time to figure out what people want to do. And if it's not about an obvious problem I know about, I don't really want to figure out what's going on. Please add proper documentation. Why do you want to contribute this? What's this patch doing? How is this doing that? Why it's a good idea to include this into the upstream project? And also, please don't just link some obscure duck discussion on a mailing list or some things like that. I don't want to look at the the mailing list with this one thread, which has, I don't know, 50 entries, and in entry 37, there is the solution for a problem that was brought up in post, I don't know, 12, and there's also the solution somewhere. That's not something I want to deal with as a maintainer. So, yeah, add some documentation, please. And again, this will also help you because it means that you can get things in a lot easier. But unfortunately, there's also this. There are your goals for this project, but there are also upstream goals for this project. And it's something that is unfortunate sometimes, but it's something you have to accept, I think. Because if I write a project for myself, for example, I put it on GitHub, then maybe it's something that's useful for me. And then someone takes this and spins this in a whole different direction. I'm going to read through this patch, and I'm going to realize that, okay, if I accept this, I don't know, I would have to maintain something entirely different, or I would need to spend a lot of time on this to also still have my use case properly work with this project. And so sometimes that's not possible because upstream doesn't have a lot of time to spend on maintaining this, for example. And so sometimes we actually have to accept that they won't accept this patch. Again, that's unfortunate because that essentially means that we have to, kind of fork this, maintain this for the long run on our own, or search for alternatives. But still, understanding that this can happen is something we should all do. And last thing I want to shortly talk about, and shortly because that's probably what most people are not so interested, or at least don't want to deal with, is to communicate all of this to management. And when I say management, that can be a number of different people. Management can actually be that it's something you should discuss within your team because you're more or less on your own, and you can make decisions like that, but it can also be that it's your boss you need to communicate this through, or it can even be upper management. It really depends on your job and what you do and how your structure of your institution is. So, first advice, if you have a strategy like that and you have this figured out among you and your colleagues, and it's something that you want to do, get a meeting with whoever your boss is and talk to them about that. But if you do that, please make sure that they are aware that this meeting is important but not urgent. Because I've seen a couple of times that when you have a meeting and you kind of communicate that it's urgent, then management is often in the position that they want to fix it right now, and want to fix it right now is essentially what you don't want to do. You do want to take a look at the long term here so please make sure that they know it's important, but it's not urgent. And just schedule a meeting. And if they say, I don't have time this week, make sure, it's important, but maybe we can do it next week. It's not something we have to deal with now, but we should deal with it eventually. And you should just, schedule a meeting. And for convincing management, there are different arguments you could make, and these are kind of related to the Techlang arguments we heard earlier. They're sometimes a little bit different because you don't necessarily care about how much money you spend, as long as you are allowed to spend that. So first thing is that they still want reliable services, and so this is something where you can talk to them and say, you know what, you get better testing, you get a low risk and stuff like that. So talking a little bit about the security benefits of having up-to-date services, because you do have time to maintain them and things like that, absolutely makes sense. The next thing you can also talk about is costs, because I can't really show you that because it would be contracts with some of our customers. But yes, some of our customers did refuse to go this way. And we have the data to kind of back that up. And long run, it's very, very certain that maintaining all these patches is often more costly because you have to spend time on all of these upgrades again and again and again, instead of basically just having this one-time investment. And so long run, you will not have to pay that much money on this anymore, which is certainly great. And that's certainly, or at least usually, an argument that management will understand. So again, risk is something that you should also talk about. Saying that what happens if I'm sick? What happens if I'm run over from by a bus? What happens if this doesn't apply during an update? All of this means that having all of these custom patches around does increase your risk. And again, this is something that management often understand. If you say this is part of our risk management to reduce this, it's usually point for you being able to spend or get the initial time and to spend on bringing things upstream. The last thing is something that I found pretty surprising, but it's something I have seen a couple of times, and that is reputation. It's not necessarily something that I would have expected when starting this out, but I have seen that when customers ended up providing all these patches upstream, that at the end of the day, they could say to either their boss or their marketing team would take that on and say, you see, we are pretty modern, we contribute to open source, we are cool, we are hip. I don't care if they do that, as long as they let me bring this stuff upstream. They're actually also correct, so why not? And it's still an argument to make to management, and it's something that they will understand because, marketing reasons, essentially. So, that's essentially it. So this is a little bit of an overview of my experience with working and maintaining open source software and developing patches, bringing stuff upstream. The strategy of trying to bring things upstream first has worked out for us quite well. We had some hiccups at the beginning where we tried to maintain too much custom code as well. I guess we were stupid at the time. A lot of these problems at least lessened with the idea of, okay, let's talk to them about getting this upstream. Let's talk to them and tell them and convince them that this will actually help people and reduce their risk and the cost and so on and so forth. And briefly, as basically the last thing I'm going to say, turning things around and looking at this from an upstream maintainer, it's also nice for upstream. So they actually get back something to their project. They get additional help. And you don't only hear on lists that someone fixed things somehow, but you actually get the patches and get that patched. So that's also nice. So that's it. Any questions?
I want to thank you for the very interesting talk. And I agree with a lot of points. It's more less of a question. I want to add something to the reputation point that you had. And I think it's also a good argument for prospective hires to that the company contributes to open source projects. And for me personally, it's one positive point about a company that they're serious about this that might make me consider during application process.
Certainly, yeah. That's something we write on all of the jobs we want to hire someone on. We always have the point that we work on open source, we try to get things upstream, and we are hip and cool.
Yeah, thank you for this talk too. My question would be, I'd like to see a concrete example. Can you name any well-known project to which you in some context contributed a patch following this strategy?
Where did I contribute? I contributed to OpenCast. You may know that if you're in higher education, they do video recordings. Big Blue Button is an example where they do video conferencing. And again, it's something where let's get a very concrete example. So Austin Rook University is running Big Blue Button as a cluster during the pandemic, and obviously they wanted to get things in fast, but in most cases was still able to convince them to get things with the next update, because Big Blue Button updates usually came out roughly a monthly rhythm or something like that. So the patches I got in there, most of them I actually contributed, got things in, and then only rolled out to Austin Rook University. There are a few things. So Big Blue Button, I always got things upstream first completely and never modified anything. But with Big Blue Button, there are also the front ends for room management and things like that. So Greenlight, I have no idea if you know that. And there we had some problems, for example, with LDAP authentication. So that's something where we had to basically run our own version for a few months, if I remember correctly. But still, it was something where we provided the patches and the documentation and stuff like that early, and we got everything in eventually. So Austin Rook University is still running Big Blue Button for video conferencing and online or hybrid teaching and stuff like that. And by now, they are completely on the stock Big Blue Button installation, so no custom patches anymore.
Hi. So one thing I didn't really completely understand during the talk is the scope of the patches that you're making. So I know that you use the LDAP fixing, LDAP authentication as an example, but how often are these entirely new functionality or something that makes a tool that doesn't quite fit a customer fully fit their needs? Can you talk a little bit about that? Just so I have a sense of how much you're maintaining.
The answer to that, I guess, is everything in some sense. So sometimes these are really small patches, and that's essentially also when we know that. So I've talked about maybe you can still maintain your upstream installation and just patch it locally if you need it and then get it in. These are usually very small patches because then if we know the upstream project, we are confident that we can get these in relatively quickly. They may fix a very specific bug that is well known in the community. These wouldn't be big new features or things like that where you would expect a lot of discussion on. With the other thing, We also provide very, very large customizations or new features or things like that, and do that on either the upstream first basis, so saying that, okay, yeah, we let's go with OpenCast, the other project I've named earlier. Again, video management in higher education. We've created a completely new online video editor, and that is something that we are going to push upstream, and no one is running that or was running that before we contributed that upstream. So this is some an example for where we want to get this upstream. This would also be an example for where we probably, if it's already a larger custom installation, where we may push that into the custom build and then get things in eventually if really the need is there. But it's also that if institutions already have these custom build for some reason, it makes things easier to get things in early. I would really try to avoid it for these large features. If you can, to build a custom build just for that. So again, for large features, we do that. For smaller patches, we do that as well. Okay. Okay, any more questions?
Yes, one thing I'd like to add is that if you bring in a patch, you prevent upstream to diverge into another direction. If you just go on with your own customizations, upstream might take another ascent and move away, and it gets worse and worse. But if you, for example, if you have large customizations, but you bring in the base framework, which you use as a foundation, you get a hook in and you prevent upstream from moving into another direction without discussing with you. It's a good strategy.
Yeah, I would definitely agree to that. Okay, then I think we're also, we are actually over time, so we should probably table the discussion. Thank you again for your attention and see you maybe later on, drinking coffee, or at least see you in another talk.